The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, for those of you who I've not met before, or not know who I am, I am the second teacher here at IMC, and I regularly teach on Tuesday morning and Thursday evening. And the other thing that I offer, I just like to say a word or two about, because it's happening soon, is twice a year I offer a non-residential daily life practice retreat where we meet for a week, morning and evening during the work week, and we'll meet Sunday afternoon for about 4 hours for instructions on daily life practice, and then morning and evening during the work week to just talk about how it's going, you know, to give support for bringing the mindfulness right into our day. And then on Saturday, we have a day long. And so if you're interested or have ever had the question, how do I bring this to my life at work, my life at home, my relationships, how do I do that? This will give you some support for that. So this will be happening, I think it's the third week in September, that the next one of these is happening. And if there's not already a flyer out there, there'll be one in the next week. There is one out there? Okay, great. So there's a flyer out there. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. And if you'd like to participate during the week, I ask that you come on Sunday afternoon because I don't give instructions during the week. We mostly have a conversation. But if you'd like to come on Sunday and just get some of the instructions and can't come during the week, that's fine. And if you can only drop in at times during the week, that's also fine. So I hope to see some of you there. So today, I'd like to talk about delusion. We often hear this kind of triad of greed, aversion, and delusion. And, greed and aversion are relatively familiar to us. They're recognizable to us. But this third one that the Buddha pointed out, the Buddha highlighted these three qualities of mind or three ways that our mind behaves, greed, aversion, and delusion, as underlying all of our mental distress, from the subtlest kind of distress to the most obvious kinds of distress. And so it's very helpful to begin to recognize these in our experience with mindfulness and to begin to learn how they operate, how they function in our minds. And so greed and aversion are usually pretty, they're easier for us to recognize. They're, the feeling of wanting something, of thinking that it's not okay if I don't have something, all the flavors of that coming under greed, and that I don't want something, I want to get rid of something, it's not okay that this thing is in my world, all the flavors of that. Those are much easier for us to begin to recognize. But delusion is often a little more challenging for us to actually recognize, oh, delusion is operating right now. Delusion is functioning in my mind right now. It almost seems like by its very nature, delusion obscures the recognition of it, of itself. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about delusion today to help perhaps give you some ways to begin to recognize its different forms, its different ways, its functions in our minds. So first, the first thing I'll say about it is that delusion can arise out of greed and aversion, that essentially because we are functioning with some idea that this thing is what I need in my life, or this thing is what I need to get rid of in my life. It's like it creates a filter in how we relate to things. I mean, this can be kind of familiar. This notion of a filter of how we respond to the world. That I'll give an example from my own practice. At one point, I was on a 3-month course, and I knew that I was really averse. I knew that I was doing walking meditation and the mind was just flooded with dislike. It didn't like, did it, I wasn't really sure what it was arising from, but I could see that the whole filter of the way I was relating to experience was flooded with dislike. And, you know, it was mostly seemed to be directed at the people who were walking right next to me. But I also noticed that as I looked down the walking path and saw somebody's shoes sitting at the end of the walking path, my mind just exploded with this, like, who put those shoes there? So this is clearly a filter, you know, that this is a way of perceiving the world that is not, you know, without bias. And this perception with a bias is a form of delusion. So these biases can, it's like you're putting on a different color of glasses, so you're not seeing things clearly, not seeing things as they are. And so greed and aversion can create that kind of bias filter for us. So that's one way that delusion can come about. But delusion is actually more fundamental than that, than just simply coming out of greed and aversion. Actually, greed and aversion are ultimately based on delusion. That if we didn't have delusion, greed and aversion would not come up. So I'll come back to this later as I go through some of the more subtle ways that delusion works in our minds. So delusion can exist in the absence of greed and aversion, but not vice versa. If you are experiencing greed and aversion, delusion is present. So that's one way to begin to just notice that when you are experiencing greed and aversion, you can begin to at least know that delusion is functioning. And as I said, I'll come back to that in a few minutes. So today I'd like to talk about three different kind of frames or aspects of delusion, different ways that delusion operates. And the first, I'll just mention them first. So there's a kind of a not knowing, a disconnection from experience. That's one way. And that may be the most common way that we think about it. And then a second way is based on delusions that are based on views, opinions, beliefs, agendas. Again, this is kind of a filter. We have a view in our mind that this is the way things are, and we see our world through that filter. And then third way is kind of a more fundamental kind of delusion that is a fundamental misperception of the truth of the way things are. And this is the deepest forms of delusion, the subtlest forms, the hardest to see. So I'll go through them in this way. So the first kind of delusion, not connecting. This is kind of the lack of awareness. You know, that we don't recognize things, that we're kind of spaced out, lost in thought. This kind of delusion is pretty familiar to us in a way, although it's not so easy to see right as it's happening. We get lost in our worlds, in our fantasies, in our thought bubbles. It's like our minds within a very short time can create a whole world, and we can start living in that world. This can also happen in dreams. In fact, I just was kind of stunned the other day. I woke up. I was teaching a retreat, and so I had to get up more earlier than I usually do, and so I'd set my alarm, and then I pushed the snooze button so that I could get another 10 minutes of rest. And in that 10 minutes, the mind, when the alarm went off 10 minutes later, I woke up into the most elaborate dream that, you know, it seemed like it had been going on for hours. There were multiple relationships, very complicated relationships with long histories that were just complete fabrications in my mind. And this happened in 10 minutes. You know, it felt like the dream had been going on for a very long time. This kind of thing happens in our day also. we find ourselves waking up into a thought bubble of projected futures or reimagined pasts. This is delusion. This is delusion operating, the sense of not connecting with what's actually happening, but being lost in our world of thought. Not too long ago, I watched a version of The Tempest, Shakespeare's The Tempest. There's a relatively new film out about this by Julie Taymor. It's actually a fabulous version of The Tempest. And in that listening to the play, I heard a couple of lines that seemed like great descriptions of delusion. And so I went back to the play afterwards. I had a copy of it and found those lines. And here's one of them. In this scenario, this one guy is doing some very strange things. And these other two characters are looking at him kind of in a mystery, kind of, what's this guy doing? And here's what they say. "This is a strange repose, to be asleep with eyes wide open, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep." That's delusion. This kind of form of not connecting, this living in an unreal world. I'm just going to mention briefly a couple of other familiar ways this form of delusion comes about, and that's sleepiness, restlessness of mind, dullness of mind. These are forms of delusion where the mind is not really connecting with experience. Doubt is another one, where our minds are wavering, not certain of what to do. That kind of wavering of mind is another form of delusion. And then the second kind of delusion, a little more subtle version of delusion, is delusion that's based in views that we have, agendas that we have, beliefs that we have, concepts that we relate to our experience through. So these kinds of delusions, these kind of views, agendas, are based on, at least at this level that I'm talking about here, this kind of view that I'm talking about, is based in our personal conditioning, our societal conditioning, based on ways that we've been raised. That kind of conditioning creates perspectives that we have, that, you know, we see our experience through these perspectives and may not be aware that we're living from a perspective. So again, being thoroughly immersed in a view, it puts a filter on, and that filter determines how we relate to the world. And in its most strong forms, it actually completely can obscure us from seeing things that are there, right in front of us, completely let us obliterate our being able to see those things. So some examples from, or one example just that we can all resonate with, is that in the history of our species, in the history of our understanding of the universe, we thought for a long time, I mean, based on direct experience, that the Earth was the center of the universe, and that we were still, and everything else was going around us. I mean, it's obvious that we're standing still in the heavens, right? I mean, it doesn't feel like we're flying through space. So, you know, that perspective was very strong. I mean, it's based in some direct experience, the most obvious direct experience, you know, that it looks like the sun, the moon, the stars all go around the Earth. And, you know, then Galileo came along and had a more refined instrument. He could begin looking at the stars, the planets, and actually began to see that there were I think it was Jupiter he was looking at, and he began to see that there were some things that were revolving around Jupiter, and that there was clearly something going around Jupiter. And this kind of shifted his perspective. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, what's... And they had previously to that been trying to figure out what the motions of the stars and planets were, and this was kind of hard. And when they shifted their mind to the idea that the Earth was going around the sun, it made all of the explanations of how the planets were traveling much simpler. So this shift of perspective, and now it's like, you know, it's not that hard for us to understand that this is that the Earth being the center of the universe is not a true perspective. I guess at this point they're saying anything could be considered the center of the universe, but you know, the equations make it easier to describe with the sun being the center of our solar system. So being immersed in a view, and you know, being immersed in a view that the Earth is the center of the universe, you know, people died over this view for proclaiming something else. I mean, it was a view that people held to tenaciously, did not want to take in the evidence to the contrary. And this is a kind of a large example, but we do this in our minds, we do this in our lives. So maybe the first way to explore this is when we have some kind of an agenda. We have something that we're trying to do. That agenda, that know, kind of focus that we have on accomplishing a certain thing can begin to, in a very natural way, I think in a way, our minds hone in on the things that we need to notice about this task and just lets go of everything else. So one year I had a big Bermuda grass infestation in my yard. And I was, you know, trying to pull up the Bermuda grass in my garden. And initially, I really had to look for the Bermuda grass. You know, it was like, it had those little thin blades of leaves, you know, but a very distinct shape to the pattern of the way the three leaves come out. And so, you know, initially I had to look pretty hard. But then I began to notice as I was going to sleep at night when I closed my eyes, I saw the pattern of Bermuda grass it was like a shadow. And it had become by that point really easy to spot. It's like I looked in my yard and boom, I found the Bermuda grass. So the mind created this filter, this to help to accomplish the task. Whether or not I was missing other things, I don't know. But there's a study, and I love to talk about this study when I talk about delusion, because it is such a mind-boggling example of this kind of agenda creating a filter where we just don't see something. So there was a study where these participants were asked to watch a video of people passing a basketball between each other. And they were told their instruction was, the agenda they were given was to count the number of times the basketball passed between the people in the white shirts. And so that's what they did. They watched the video, they counted the number of times the basketball was passed between the people in the white shirts. At the end of the video, most people could very accurately report the number. Most people also had not seen that during that game of the people passing the basketball, a guy in a gorilla suit had walked through the scene and had stood there in the middle of the court and then walked off. I mean, he was really obvious. Because of that agenda, they had missed that event. And then when they played the video back again, and this is what I find so amazing, actually, when they played the video back again, you know, you can't not see the gorilla, you know, it's like, he's right in the middle of things. And they said, oh, that's got to be a different video. That's not the video I saw. I would have seen that. So it's really quite amazing how our minds, given something like this, I mean, this is a, you know, we'll just not see things. So this is, you know, it's a little bit humbling to realize that our minds do this kind of thing. So having an agenda, you know, in a way it serves us, because if they had been seeing that gorilla, it would have distracted them from the counting, right? So in having an agenda, our minds seem to do that. It's like, okay, this is my task, and we focus on that. Other things get blocked out. But this kind of thing of seeing some things and not seeing others also comes when we hold particular views, particular beliefs. So we have views about ourselves, about others. We, you know, kind of, in a way, box ourselves in, believing, you know, this is me, this is what I'm capable of. You know, I'm not capable of doing this or that. This person, that's who they are. You know, they're always going to be this or that. And we know how it feels when somebody else does this to us. You know, how it feels when somebody's like saying, oh, well, that's just the way you are. It's like, well, no, that's not just the way I am, you know. So when when other people do it to us, we kind of, you know, bristle about it. You know, don't box me in. Don't tell me who I am. You don't know who I am. But we do this same thing to ourselves, limiting ourselves because of beliefs, of views, of who we are. Another example of a way that this is this kind of view works for us is a kind of the creation of a view in a way. It leads us to just believe that things are a certain way. Comes from the kind of classic story of the blind man and the elephant. And this is actually a story that's in the Pali Canon. It's in the Buddhist teaching. The Buddha taught this story. I think that's interesting. I don't know if this is the first place it appears, but it's an ancient Indian teaching story. And, you know, many of you probably are familiar with this, that people are brought to blind people are brought to an elephant, and some of them are shown or asked to feel various parts of the elephant. Some are, you know, shown the leg, others the tail, others the side, others the ears, and they feel that, and then they create some idea, and they're asked, you know, what is an elephant like? And some say, well, it's like a post, those who felt the legs, and others like a broom, those who felt the tail, or others like the side of a storeroom, those that felt the wall, and others like a hose, those that felt the trunk, or like a winnowing basket, those who felt the ear. And they were willing, they were, because, I mean, this is one of those things, you know, because the information came from direct evidence, personal evidence, it's like they were willing to fight over their view. It's like, no, it's not like a storeroom, it's like a post. How can you not know that it's like a post? And be, you know, fighting about this. You know, so this is a kind of very tenacious kind of view that gets created, where the information that we take in creates a perspective that's based on incomplete information. And this is really, I think, in a way, the way that the Earth is the center of the universe view is constructed. And, you know, it's not just a small thing that people fight over these things. People create wars over views. So it's not a small thing to begin to recognize that we are seeing things from a particular perspective. To begin to recognize this is a perspective rather than this is the truth. Another way that I want to mention this form of delusion coming about is that we often relate to our experience through an idea, through a concept, rather than through direct experience. So an example of, you know, in terms of how this can unfold and actually alter how we emotionally respond to the world. So some of you have heard this story, I know. I was in Burma and meditating in a monastery in Burma. And every evening around the same time, it was in a monastery that was kind of in a rural area, and we were surrounded by a village. And I was always hearing village sounds kind of floating over the walls of the monastery, you know, loudspeakers and, you know, sounds of village life. And every evening around the same time, I would be meditating in my room and I would hear this squealing sound. And the squealing sound to me, what my mind identified it as was a pig. And it was a squealing of a pig. So that's what my mind did with that. It created the idea of a pig. And the sound, the squealing, to me had the sound of distress. And so my mind also additionally created the idea that what I was hearing was the butchering of a pig. And that this was the nightly pig being killed to feed the village. And so compassion was arising for me around this. That this was the idea that came to my mind, and the idea of a pig being slaughtered and in distress created a sense of compassion. And so I was, you know, doing some compassion practice for this pig. And then one night, instead of being in my room at that hour, I was doing some walking meditation. I was doing walking meditation up and down the walkway in the monastery, and I saw these bats kind of flying around, and they were squealing. And that was the sound that I had been hearing, that the squealing pig that was being butchered every evening were bats. So this was, again, this was a view, this was a concept that the mind had created. It heard the sound, it created the concept of pig, and then related to the sound through that concept. When I found out it was bats, you know, the compassion just stopped. I mean, there wasn't any being that was based on that sound that needed that compassion. So again, you know, we relating to experience through concept. And this happens in very subtle ways too. You know, that we relate to our bodies through concept rather than through the actual felt sense. And this is one way that meditation actually begins to support our unveiling of delusion. That, you know, just for right now, just put your attention in the experience of your hand. You know, just hold out your hand and just feel the experience of your hand. You know, what do you experience in your hand? The vibration, tingling, pulsing, pressure, coolness, stiffness, all the sensations you feel in your hand. Close your eyes for a moment so you can really feel the hand. And now open your eyes and look at your hand and think about it as hand. And as you do that, what happens to those sensations? For me, at least, when I do that, when I look at my hand and think about it, you know, this is my hand and I can do things with it and pick things up with it, the sensations really go into the background and I almost don't feel them at all anymore. And so that's in the relating to our bodies through concept, which is how we often relate to our bodies, we're missing the actual felt, lived experience in the body. So concepts are useful. You know, it's very useful to have this idea of, You know, I walk into the room and there are men and women and, you know, chairs and floor and walls. And if I had to come into this room and recreate all those concepts every time, you know, it would take a long time to navigate the world. So it's very useful, and it's a function of what our minds naturally do. So it's not a problem that our minds create concepts, but it's really helpful to know when we are relating to experience through concept, because it can so easily move into relating through ideas rather than what's actually happening. So beginning to explore for yourself, you know, what is actually happening here? What's an idea and what's actually happening? So the third kind of delusion, the most fundamental kind, is more, this last kind that I was talking about is, you know, ways that we typically create our views, our opinions, our agendas are created based on who we are, you know, what our parents taught us, what our schools taught us, you know, all of those kinds of things, all the views, opinions, agendas, how we relate to the world. A lot of that is formed based on our personal conditioning. And then there are some fundamental ways that all humans seem to mistakenly relate to the world. And these are three that the Buddha identified, three fundamental distortions of perception. Again, they cloud our experience. All of these delusions function in the similar way, that with a perspective, a distortion, we're seeing the world in a way that it is not accurately representing what's actually happening. So again, it's like a filter. So the three basic distortions, this will be familiar to some of you, these three basic distortions are seeing what is impermanent as permanent, seeing what is unreliable as a reliable, satisfactory place for happiness to be found, and then seeing what is not self to be self. So I'll talk about these briefly. Again, we're running short on time, so I'll just be brief on this. But just a kind of a perspective around this from my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya. He talks about this kind of delusion. What he says is, this kind of delusion doesn't prevent us from seeing objects, doesn't prevent us from experiencing things, but it does prevent us from seeing the true nature of those objects or that experience. So he says, delusion doesn't mask the object, it masks the true nature of the object. This kind of delusion, this really fundamental kind of delusion. Another quote from Shakespeare. Again, a character is talking about what some other character is doing and recognizing. And it's actually two characters talking to each other. And the first says to the second, "He misses not much." And the second responds, "No, he doth but mistake the truth totally." This is what our minds do with these kinds of delusion. So, seeing what is impermanent as permanent. The rapidity of change, how does this happen? The rapidity of change often masks impermanence. That things are actually changing so rapidly that our bodily processes, the way we see things and feel things, our bodily processes aren't designed to detect change that's happening at that rapid level in our normal state of consciousness. And so we just don't experience that. It's akin to the old way that movies used to work, where there was a frame and another frame, and you know, it's just like these frames of still pictures, but moving very rapidly, it creates this illusion of people moving and acting and doing things. But they're not actually people moving and acting and doing things up on the screen. It's just this, these images, these still images moving by very rapidly. And so the way our eye works creates this continuity of perception and creates the illusion that there's something there. So that's one of the ways that this delusion works for us. Just because of the nature of our senses, it masks, because things are changing so rapidly, it masks the change. As we begin to explore in our mindfulness, begin to meet our experience with mindfulness, the mindfulness begins to actually allow our senses to be more refined. We can begin to see how all of our experience is changing very rapidly. That there isn't anything that happens that lasts for more than just a split second. Everything is just this flow of change. So another way that this is masked for us is, again, through concept. We have concepts about things, and the concept, because we're relating to experience through the concept, we may not notice that the thing is changing out from under us because we're relating through the concept. So the second kind of fundamental distortion is seeing what is unreliable as reliable, as a satisfying, as a place where we can say, yes, this is going to make me happy. This truth is intimately connected to the truth of impermanence, that there is nothing that lasts for long. Essentially, you know, we live our lives trying to get things that we like, get rid of things that we don't like, believing that this is the way to happiness. Now, this is where the delusion of greed arises. We believe that this is how happiness will come for us. That if we find a way to construct the world so that we have things that are pleasant and don't have things that are unpleasant, that will be happiness. There's a kind of belief in a way that we have that this is as good as it gets. This is the best kind of happiness that is available for us. But things are changing so rapidly that there's no way that we can find happiness based in experience. Sense pleasure is unreliable as a place for happiness. And this is one of the reasons why we suffer so much. You know, we don't actually acknowledge that this is just the natural course of things. When things change, this is the natural course of things. When things change, we get upset often. I mean, sometimes when things change, they change in the way we'd like them, and then we're happy. But it's going to be impermanent. So we don't like this truth of impermanence overall. You know, the fact that we can't control our world and create this perfect state that everything will be just the way I like it. We can't do that. And it's not a failure. It's not a personal failure. It's just the way it is. And the third, seeing what is not self as self. So this one, I've only got 2 minutes. So we're going to have to do the most brief version of this one. So this one, we mistake process for thing. That's kind of the easiest way to look at this. That what's happening in our lives is an unfolding of causes and conditions. There's a natural kind of law that results, that kind of drives the unfolding of a process in our lives. Much like the law of gravity drives much of the way things behave on our planet. You know, if I wanted to, like, take this glass and put it in the air, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, I don't try to to resist that law of gravity. I know it's a law. And likewise, there are natural laws that govern how we behave, the way our minds work, natural laws. That when we act out of greed, aversion, delusion, it tends to head us towards suffering, struggle. When we act out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, it tends to head us towards happiness. So much of how we behave, how we respond in our world is motivated by these natural laws. There's no one here directing that. It's like there's no one. If I were to try to put this glass in the air and it fell and dropped, it wouldn't be like there was, you know, an entity that was making that happen. It's just a natural law. And likewise, you know, we can kind of think about like the growing of a tree. This is another way I like to think about this, that if we have a seed or an acorn, you know, you plant that acorn, and there's no being in that acorn that is trying to become a tree. There is a set of natural processes that if conditions are right, that acorn will become a tree. It needs the moisture, it needs the sun, it needs to not be eaten when it sprouts. So there's many conditions that come into play for that acorn to turn into a tree, but there is no being there that is doing that change. It's natural unfolding law, natural process, supported by causes and conditions. Very much the same way, essentially, we are an unfolding process. No one here that is doing that. Even ways that we choose, something that we make a choice, I'm going to decide this. Even that comes about based on a process. So beginning to explore this. And this is really the fundamental delusion the Buddha pointed to, that, you know, greed and aversion really can arise out of this one, that the mistaken notion that I need something, that I need to get rid of something, that's a kind of a fundamental ground out of which greed and aversion can grow. So I need to stop. So thank you all for your attention. I'm sorry there wasn't time for questions and comments. And we have a potluck. So if you have questions, I'm happy to hang out here and